In northern Asia, petite songbirds known as Siberian ruby throats are arriving en masse. Some winging their way across the South China Sea from the Philippines, others over the mountains from Thailand. These three examples, a tiny sample from among thousands of migratory species, only hint at the overall grandeur of worldwide avian migration, one of the most fundamental processes in all of nature. Get a good look at these three birds and all we feature on BirdNote when you come to our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
We're from the Kiwassa Preteen Spring Camp. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University on Burnaby Mountain. We're from the Kiwassa Preteen Spring Camp. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Campus Community Radio from Simon Fraser University on Burnaby Mountain.
We are sharing a couple of our favorite bear tales in this half hour, and the next one, Bearhead, comes from Russia. That's retold by Eric A. Kimmel and published by Holiday House.
One day in early fall, a woman went to the forest to gather mushrooms. As she was filling her basket, she heard a cry from beneath a pile of dead leaves. She brushed the leaves aside and found a baby, but not an ordinary baby. From its neck up, it had the eyes, ears, and muzzle of a bear cub. The woman had no children of her own, so she wrapped the baby in a shawl, put it in her basket, and took it home. Her husband just shook his head when he saw the strange foundling.
Oh, this baby must belong to the bear folk. I think you ought to put it back where you found it.
I will not, husband.
Oh,
however strange this baby is, I mean to keep it.
Very well, but you gotta name it.
I will name it, and well, it looks to me like a bear head.
That's original.
Years went by, and Bearhead grew up. He not only looked like a bear, he was as big as a bear, and just as strong. His parents grew used to his odd appearance, and after a while, they didn't notice it. They loved Bearhead as if he were their own child, and Bearhead loved them. He tried his best to be an obedient son, and always did exactly as he was told. Well, one day, Bearhead's father received a letter from Madame Hexaba, summoning him to be her servant. Bearhead's father shook with fear, for Madame Hexaba was a witch who owned all the lands around. No one who entered her palace ever returned.
Father, do not worry. I'll go in your place. I'm not afraid of Madame Hexaba. After all, I can do the work of 10 strong men.
Bearhead kissed his parents goodbye and walked all the way to Madame Hexaba's palace. He arrived just as the old witch was finishing her supper.
Hello.
Who are you, and what are you doing here?
My name is Bearhead. My father sent me to be your new servant.
Servant? You? Creatures like you belong in a cage, not a palace. However, I am a kind, kind witch, and I'll give you a chance to prove yourself, so show me how quickly you can clear away this table.
Quicker than you think.
And Bearhead picked up the whole table, platters and all, and flung it out the window. And it fell in the courtyard with a crash.
What's the matter with you? Have you lost your wits? I didn't want you to throw out the whole table. I meant just put away the dishes, you silly.
You should say what you mean.
Oh, that's no excuse. You apologize to me at once.
Very well. I'm sorry I threw your table out the window.
That's that's not good enough. Show me you're really sorry. I want you to kiss my feet.
Whatever you wish.
And Bearhead grabbed Madame Hexabah by the ankles, jerked her upside down, and planted big kisses on her toes.
Let me go. Let me go at once.
Whatever you wish.
Bearhead let her go, and Madame Hexabah landed on her head, and she lay on the floor moaning.
Oh, you hurt me, you big bear. Do you want to know if I hurt myself?
Yes, did you hurt yourself?
No. You're too dangerous to have in the house. I'm going to have to find work for you outside.
Oh, good. I like working outdoors.
So Madame Hexabah drank a glass of toad juice to calm her nerves. Then she led Bearhead outside to a peculiar round building built of black stones. It had no windows. Its one iron door was locked with a very heavy padlock.
This is my treasure house.
Okay.
Inside it are piles of jewels and more money than you can imagine. Don't touch it. Tonight, I want you to stay here and keep your eyes on that door and make sure no one tampers with the lock. Can you do that?
I can do that.
Madame Hexabah left him and went off to bed. One by one, the lights of the palace went out. Bearhead sat down to watch the treasure house door. He watched and watched as hard as he could, and the night grew dark, and it began to rain, and Bearhead sneezed. He felt cold and wet and very uncomfortable.
Why am I sitting out here in the rain? I can watch this door just as easily inside as out.
So he took hold of the door, and he ripped it off its hinges, padlock and all, and then he lifted it onto his back and he carried it inside. Later that night, a band of robbers rode by, and finding the witch's treasure house door wide open, they wasted no time in making off with every bit of her treasure. The next morning, when Madame Hexabah found her treasure gone, she let out a shriek.
What did you do? What did you do? I told you to guard my treasure house.
No, you didn't. You told me to keep my eyes on the door and make sure no one tampered with a lock. I did that. The door's in the kitchen, nice and safe and sound. So's the lock. I watched them all night. No one touched either one.
What am I going to do with this bear head? He's going to be the absolute ruin of me. Oh, what am I going to do? I have an idea. Bear head,
yes,
darling dear.
Yes.
I have a very special job for you since you're so wonderful. Mm-hmm. On the other side of the forest is a lake. And in that lake lives a goblin. And, well, he hasn't paid me rent in 100 years, and I want you to go to that lake and make the goblin pay what he owes.
100 years is a lot of rent. How am I going to carry all that money?
You wonderful bearhead. Just take a wagon with you. Oh. You're very, very strong.
Okay.
You can pull a wagon by yourself. You don't even need a horse.
All righty.
So Bearhead found a wagon, and pulling it behind him, he started off down the road. Madame Hexabah waited until he was out of sight.
This will pay that wicked Bearhead back for what he did to me. That goblin is a fearsome, fearsome creature. Even I am afraid of him. No one who goes near that lake ever returns.
But Bearhead knew nothing of this. As he walked through the forest, pulling the wagon behind, he noticed something fluttering in a tree. It was a little bird caught in a snare. Bearhead freed the tiny creature and put it in his pocket. Taking hold of the wagon once more, he continued on his way. The road through the forest ended at a rocky beach where nothing grew except weathered stumps of long dead trees. As Bearhead approached the lake, he noticed that the birds had stopped singing. No insects hummed, and the only sound was the slap of waves against the shore. Bearhead went down to the lake and gathering up the rocks, the biggest rocks he could find, he threw them one by one into the water. And all at once, the lake began to bubble and boil, and then the goblin appeared. He had long, scaly arms and heels, winding body, and the head of a giant frog. On top of his head, he wore a tall, green hat.
Hey, who's throwing rocks through my window?
I am.
You? Well, aren't you a sight? I know I look strange, but you take the prize. We must be cousins. What can I do for you, cousin?
Why, Madam Hexable sent me. She wants you to pay the rent that you owe.
Why, that old witch can whistle Dixie for all I care. But since we're cousins, I'll make you a deal. Let's see who can throw a rock the farthest. If you win, you can have anything you want. But if you lose, that down below the lake, you come to live with me.
That sounds fair to me.
So the goblin reached out and picked up a rock as big as Bearhead's wagon, and he threw it across the lake. Bearhead watched it splash on the other side.
Good throw, cousin, but your rock splashed into the lake. Mine won't. It'll keep on going. Watch.
He reached into his pocket and cupped the little bird in his hand.
Fly, bird, fly.
And he threw it into the air, and the bird stretched out its wings, flew across the lake, and disappeared into the trees.
You're a tricky fellow. Your rock was a lot smaller than I expected. All the same, you won. Tell me what you want.
Not much. Fill my wagon with gold and give me your hat. I've taken a fancy to it.
The goblin didn't mind losing the gold, but he hated losing the hat. Even so, he kept his word, and Bearhead started back toward Madam Hexaba's palace with a wagon full of gold and the goblin's green hat pulled down over his ears. Madam Hexaba was in the tower room watering her poison ivy when she saw the tall green hat coming over the hill.
The goblin? He's coming to get me!
She ran all over the palace, pulling in shutters and bolting doors, and finally she threw herself under the bed and lay there trembling. Bearhead stopped at the front door, and to his surprise, he found the palace was locked and barred.
I'm here. Open the door. I brought your rent money.
Go away. Go away.
But what should I do about the money?
Keep it. Keep it. Keep it, you goblin.
Whatever you say.
So Bearhead started off toward his parents' house, pulling the wagon behind him. His mother and father were overjoyed to see him. And when they saw all the gold he brought with him, their delight knew no bounds. Bearhead was happy, too. Yet at the same time, he could not help feeling sad.
I can only stay a short while. Then I must be on my way.
To where? Isn't this your home, dear?
No, not any longer. Tomorrow I must return to the forest. A voice inside my heart speaks to me. It says the time has come for me to find my own people, to make a new life for myself with them.
But surely you will come back someday, dear.
I do not know, Mother. But watch for me when the trees begin to bloom and the mushrooms start to grow.
My happy song, Valerie.
Stone's album, The Happy Wanderer, that was the title track itself. Hey, before we run out of time, don't forget to check out tellusatale.com if you have a chance. Having said that, we'll see you again soon, right here on Tell Us a Tale.
Hi, this is Pete Seeger. Whether you'd like to be Sam the Whaler, or if you're in the mood for good stories and music from around the world, you ought to listen to Tell Us a Tale with Peter Jones.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia, Simon Fraser University Campus Radio, streaming on the internet at www.cjsf.ca.
Peter Jones, and you are indeed listening to Tell Us a Tale, where Jen Hoffman and I are going to pull out a couple of our favorite bear tales, starting with a Native American tale from the Haida of the Pacific Northwest called The Day Sun Was Stolen, adapted by Jamie Oliviero, and that's published by Hyperion Books for Children.
Created all the animals. He scooped up some clay and shaped it into a round body and fish tail and called it Seal. Then he did the same things again, only this time he jumped up and down on the tail to flatten it and called his creation Beaver. Finally, only one lump of clay remained. While he thought about what to create, Raven rolled the clay in the mud and moss, back and forth, back and forth. When the lump became large and round, Raven breathed life into it and made Bear. Because Raven had rolled the clay back and forth through the moss, Bear's coat was twice as thick and twice as furry as any other animal's. When sun shone down, all the other animals welcomed the warmth, but not Bear. Sun's rays bothered him and made him hot. Day after day, Bear sweltered in the heat. Finally, when he could stand it no longer, he reared up, shook his huge furry paws at Sun, and said,
"I'm going to get you."
Bear was determined to stop Sun from shining. He walked and walked until he came to the highest mountain. Then he climbed higher and higher until he reached its snow-capped peak. Sun watched as Bear scooped up some snow and put it into his mouth. Then Bear reached up, yanked Sun out of the sky, and held him in his mouth. Bear's mouth was so cold from the snow that Sun couldn't burn it, and Bear walked triumphantly back to his cave. In front of the cave, Bear rolled aside a rock that was too large and heavy for anyone else to move, uncovering a deep hole. He placed Sun inside and pushed the rock back in place. Without Sun, the world was cold and gray. That didn't bother Bear, because his coat was so thick and furry, but all the other animals began to shiver. When Raven saw how his creatures were suffering, he began to cry. The world became cold and gray and rainy. The people who lived in the camp beside the river began to complain. They wanted Sun back. A young boy named Chinadabju, which means small fish, asked his wise grandmother what had made Sun disappear.
"It is Bear. Bear has stolen Sun."
Grandmother, I know what I have to do.
The boy knew he had to help the animals and his people, but he was afraid of Bear. Finally, after many days, he thought of a plan.
"I will trick Bear into releasing Sun, Grandmother. When he goes to the river to eat, I will go there and put on the magic fish skin that you keep in your medicine pouch, and I'll hide until Bear has eaten three fish. Bear always eats three fish. Once he is finished eating, I will dive into the water and let him catch me. By that time, he'll be so full that he'll take me to his cave and save me for later. When he's asleep, I'll fix him so that he will want to let the sun go."
Grandmother was proud of Chinadabju's bravery. She watched him go to the river's edge, and when he began to pull the fish skin over his feet, she returned to camp. As Chinadabju pulled, the fish skin began to stretch until it covered his body. He looked just like a fish. When he saw Bear catch his third fish, Chinadabju splashed into the water. Everything happened as planned. Bear caught the boy in the fish skin, but was too full to eat him. He carried his prize catch back to the cave, dropped him in a corner, and settled down for a nap. As soon as Bear was sleeping, Chinadabju jumped up, peeled off the fish skin, and took out of his pocket a clam shell that Grandmother had given him. He sharpened the shell on a stone and began to shave the sleeping bear. Soon the boy had shaved off so much fur that Bear's coat was only half as thick as it had been. The boy scooped up the shaved fur and stuffed it into a sack to carry away so Bear could not stick it back on. Holding the sack in one hand and stuffing the rolled up fish skin in his pocket, the boy tiptoed out of the cave. As he ran back to the camp through the forest, a branch tore a hole in the sack, and all of Bear's fur was scattered by the wind. Tina Dobju returned to camp and gave Grandmother the fish skin to put in her medicine pouch.
Let us now see what happens, Grandmother.
When Bear woke up, he was surprised to feel his body shivering and his teeth chattering. He had never been cold before, and for the first time he desired the warmth of sun. Bear ran to the rock, rolled it aside, grabbed Sun, and tossed him so high that he stuck in the sky. Soon Sun, who had lost most of his heat in the hole, regained his brilliance, and all the animals of the forest and the people of the camp were warm again. Raven was pleased and no longer cried for his creatures. Bear liked his thinner coat. It was more comfortable. However, when winter came, he began to shiver. With his new coat, he could not stand the cold. When North Wind began to blow, Bear refused to go outside and decided to sleep. But some of the other animals had gathered Bear's scattered fur and saved it. When the weather grew colder, they added it to their own coats. And that is why, to this day, some woodland animals grow thicker fur in the winter to keep themselves warm, while Bear sleeps.
And the background of that story was music off Burning in the Sky's album, Spirit in the Wind. You're listening to Tell Us a Tale.
You're listening to CJ.